Now, we talked a lot yesterday and again this evening with Mark Dreyfus on that High Court decision, Michaela Banerjee, and a former Chief Justice of the Family Court of Australia has been commenting about it too. He's hit out on social media at the High Court's move on public servants' freedom of speech. Alastair Nicholson says it was a sad result from a very technical High Court, which, in his view, has departed from the vision of the court that decided Mabo and other landmark cases. Professor Gillian Triggs is the former president of the Australian Human Rights Commission, as she joins us now. Gillian, welcome.
Good evening.
Before we get to our own thoughts on the High Court's decision, what do you make of Alastair Nicholson's criticism?
Well, I think he's right. And I think it's interesting that he makes a point that it's an important one, and that is that we've had a more progressive court in the past. There's a sort of feeling at the moment that the views of the High Court are written concrete, and they've always been that way. Mm. And that's not the truth. The truth is we've had a very forward-thinking series of courts in the 80s and the 90s that gave us Mabo, gave us the Teo case in relation to protecting children. There are many, many examples. And it's disappointing that we have a court that doesn't have that vision that it once had.
Justices of the High Court are, of course, appointed. I mean, is this the intent of successive appointments to change the nature of that court's thinking?
Well, you know, it's a harsh judgment to make. I mean, of course, ultimately they are political appointments, and so they have to be effectively dependent on the advice of others within the profession. But I think we're blessed in Australia with a very high calibre of High Court, and we're blessed with good judges across the system for the most part. Mm. So that's not really the problem. And of course, we all know that you might appoint a judge thinking they're going to be conservative, only to find that they do the very reverse. And indeed, one relatively recent appointment did, in fact, a very conservative tax commercial, wonderful lawyer, made a judgment about returning a refugee to Nauru that was really quite progressive in its thinking about an interpretation of the Constitution. So, of course, you can never be sure as a politician or as a member of government, the Prime Minister, that you're going to get somebody who's going to give conservative judgments. But I think the thrust of your question is do we have a conservative court at the moment? And I think the answer is we do. And we certainly have a court that's providing, in my view, and I do so very respectfully, because as I've said, I respect the quality and the integrity of our courts, particularly the High Court. But nonetheless, it's been very disappointing in failing to give us judgments which are a little bit more than these highly technical analyses that, to my view, almost completely missed the point, which is quite distressing.
So that's been the case in matters other than this Banerjee matter? Are there other decisions that lead you to that conclusion?
Well, of course, the ones that I'm most alert to, and I should stress I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but nonetheless these cases have had an enormous impact on my former role in trying to give effect to fundamental freedoms. That was my job. Mm. But I found that over and over again, particularly with regard to asylum seeker refugee issues, along with counter-terrorism issues and data retention questions of freedom of speech, but particularly asylum seeker refugees, you have a court that has extraordinarily upheld the detention without charge or trial of those seeking asylum, apparently indefinitely. And that is not contrary to some rule that sort of left-leaning people in the UN invented after the Second World War. That principle goes back to the Magna Carta, of course, of 2015, more than 800 years ago. So these are not new ideas. The common law freedoms are ancient ideas, and they're ones that, unfortunately, the High Court of Australia will almost never even discuss today, which is astonishing. I've read the Banerjee case. Of course, it's only just been decided. It was a quick read, but nonetheless, it is extremely disappointing that at no stage are the fundamental common law principles that underpin our democracy are not discussed by the court. And of course, as an international lawyer, I'm inevitably going to be disappointed because the court does not discuss the international legal obligations that we've adopted in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, going right back to the days of Dr. H.V. Evatt and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So these are not new ideas. They are part of the common law, but we have a high court that is really, there's almost no trace of these issues in their judgments these days.
So in that particular case, in the Banerjee decision, I mean, the effect of not addressing those ancient principles, what's that going to do to the liberties or otherwise of Australian public servants?
Well, a great deal, and it's extremely worrying because we have a government, or we had a government over a number of years, that is piece by piece passing legislation which chips away at these fundamental freedoms. So Banerjee's no particular surprise. And I should say that one has to be careful. Courts are always cautious in applying the law to the facts in front of them.
Yes.
And the facts here were of a woman who was wanting to bring out into the public arena her concerns at the breaches by Australia of fundamental rights of asylum seekers and refugees. So that was a laudable, I might say. But she did so in 9,000 tweets as a public servant, only one of which was, in fact, at work, but that's probably irrelevant. They were anonymous, but the court found that was pretty irrelevant as well because you're bound to be found out, as she was. But it is extremely disappointing that although her case may in particular have been a particularly egregious one, and the government, of course, has a perfect right to want to achieve the independence and objectivity and neutrality of its public servants. That's a perfectly proper objective, and of course that's the view of the High Court in saying that the laws that restrict her right to speak up were certainly a burden on the right of political communication, but were proportionate and necessary in the circumstances. Now, one could agree with that, but the irony is that while the government, through legislation, will insist on the absolute neutrality and integrity of its public servants, continues over the last few years in particular to make political appointments, highly political appointments, at senior public service levels. It's quite paradoxical.
There's something of a pincer movement there. I mean, I guess the thing in the Banerjee decision is that this, as you say, the quantum of this indiscretion is extraordinary. I mean, 9,000 or so tweets is something of a campaign. This is not just somebody injudiciously doing something on Instagram. This is quite protracted.
Exactly. So one could, I mean, I think a fair-minded Australian would say, well, look, she deserved this. She went right out there. And she knew perfectly well what the rules were. We do want a public service that we can have trust in, that we can believe in the neutrality. She clearly didn't have a neutral view on this question. Now, her view happens to be one that I basically agree with. The government is acting illegally in carrying out these migration or policies in relation to asylum seekers and refugees. But if you were going to pick a case to apply these laws, this has probably been, on the facts, a pretty fair case. But that's not the danger of the Banerjee case. The danger of this case is that the court has been absolutely crystal clear in a unanimous judgment that the right to freedom of speech does not apply to the individual as a consequence of the interpretation of the Constitution.
So that can affect somebody who has just made one injudicious tweet.
Exactly. Now, whether that would in fact ever be used against that public servant remains to be seen. In other words, this is an egregious case. If they were ever going to prosecute anybody, this is it. So we don't know, of course, in the future quite how this would work, because the test is really, is the legislative provision a burden on the right to political communication? And if so, is that burden one that's reasonable and proportionate? And if you take that very, very narrow analysis of the issue, you would say, of course, the court is quite right in saying sanction used against her was one that was within the discretion and proper discretion of the government. That's fine. We can live with that because this is such an extraordinary case, such an egregious case.
Yes.
But the problem is the chilling effect it's going to have on everybody else, from my point of view, at a very time when I am urging people to speak up, because the government is in breach of obligations in relation to its own citizens, time and time again. And there has never been a more important time for individual Australians to have that right to speak up. And sadly, I think we'll have a significant chilling effect. This has happened, of course, at a time when the government is proceeding with criminal prosecutions against a lawyer who supported a whistleblower in relation to the Timor Gap negotiations, where Australia was effectively spying on East Timor. So, I mean, and of course we have the raids on the ABC, but I mean, the intrusions into fundamental freedoms are legion over the last 15 years.
There seems to be a pattern of behaviour.
It's a pattern. And so when you get a High Court decision like this on a particular issue of freedom of speech in the middle of the full hour debate and the other questions of 18C and race discrimination, the problem of racial hatred and vilification in the context of terrorism and white supremacy, it is an extraordinarily unhelpful and overly restrictive determination by the High Court. So it's disappointing, but as I say, courts are keen to confine what they have to say to the facts in front of them. And this was a best-case scenario, if you like. If you're going to bring one to the court, this has got to be it.
Gillian, thank you so much for your time and explanatory thoughts.
It's a great pleasure to speak to you, Jonathan.
Gillian Triggs, former president of the Australian Human Rights Commission.